my name is Lauren Early, and I am a former six-time World Irish Dance Champion who is now devoted to helping every dancer achieve big dreams of their own. On each episode, we will bring you the best questions to help you discover and unlock your full potential so that you can benefit in every possible way. Thank you for listening, and I hope you enjoy the show.
Hey everyone, and welcome to episode 16 of the Reaching New Heights podcast. Guys, I just want to wish you all a massive happy new year. And we're now in 2018, and I believe we're around 10 weeks away from Worlds. So welcome to the new year, everyone. A big apologies for the run-up into the final weeks of 2017. I know I promised you all a podcast per week, but we just had a huge influx of dancers joining the academy for Christmas orders and so on. And unfortunately, it just wasn't possible to get the content out. But in 2018, we're absolutely going to get a lot more of these podcasts done. I've had a lot of people asking when the next ones are going to be done. And so I will do my absolute best to set some time aside to do these hopefully once per week. Okay. The structure for the podcast in 2018, I think, to make it a lot easier for us and to give you guys a lot more valuable content, would be to go through in a little bit more detail some of the posts that we put out for the previous few days or the previous weeks. So for example, if I was to record a podcast on a Friday or towards the end of the week, I want the idea to be that we can actually talk in more detail about the posts that we put out during that week, at least the training related posts, right? Because one of the biggest issues we have with social media is that the attention span on social media lasts for around 15 seconds or so, okay? And so by the time someone watches a quick video, they've already moved on. But the attention span on a podcast is obviously a lot longer. You guys are going to come onto a podcast and listen and know that you're coming on to listen for a lot longer than 15 seconds, right? So I think the podcast will be a great way for us to dive into a lot more detail, because what happens when we put out the short clips on social media is that everybody always has a lot more questions to ask around the type of, you know, the stuff that is relevant to them. For example, if we put out a video about front clicks and they spot themselves in, you know, a video, or they recognize a move and they realize that that's something that they struggle with, we're automatically going to get a lot of questions about that, wanting to know a lot more detail, because we can only cover a very short snippet on a Facebook post or an Instagram post, and we can only really cover the main points. And as soon as that resonates with someone, they're going to want to know more, right? So hopefully, if we can use these podcasts as a way to review the week's content on social media and actually go into a little bit more detail, it should help you guys understand the post a little bit better, and also just get so much more value out of what we're trying to get across that week, so that you can actually put things into place. So the issue with again with social media is that people like the videos, they pick up the issue that is wrong, but it's just because it happens so quick, they go away and they aren't really able to put a lot of effort into fixing it. They just know that it was nice to watch or interesting to read, right? So hopefully we can give more value so that you can actually do something about it. So to kick it off, a few things we spoke about last week on social media was, if we start with the first post, we were talking about being in your most efficient gear. Now, if we look at the date of this, it's now the 12th of January as I speak, and it is a Friday. So from Monday, the 8th of January, which is really the first week of the new year where everyone's back at work and school and so on, what is it that we wanted to discuss? Now, as I mentioned a few minutes ago, it's around 10 weeks to Worlds. And one of the issues we see coming into Worlds is that the training volume increases. Now, I've probably spoke about this in podcasts before, and no doubt I'll speak about it again. But training starts to increase as you go into a major competition. And this is just a habit that the sport has formed, unfortunately. So during the week, we started throwing in a post around being in your most efficient gear. And the quote was, third gear doesn't help when the race is in fifth. And what really meant by that was that there's a few different angles of what we were trying to cover, really. But the first thing we're trying to really get across is that your body adapts to all forms of exercise and movement. So anything you do, your body is going to adapt to it very, very quickly. And by quickly, I mean that we're probably going to adapt around 4 to 8 weeks, okay? Generally, if something is new to you, you can adapt, you know, towards the 8 week mark. But if you look at, for example, the junior and senior academies, we have the older dancers change their training every 8 weeks, and we have the junior dancers change their training every 4 weeks. Younger dancers will adapt much quicker because their body is still growing. They're able to learn skills quicker than an older person. But also, one of the reasons why the junior training changes more frequently is just because younger kids and dancers, they will get demotivated repeating the same thing for a long period of time. So you get better results changing it even more frequent with a younger dancer because it keeps things fresh and more exciting, and therefore they're willing to work harder. An older dancer will just get it done, right? Athletes don't really care what they have to do. So long as they know it's going to make them better, they're going to work hard and get it done. So every 8 weeks is generally the time where we need to start changing training around. Now, that goes for absolutely everything. That goes for dancing, strength training. It goes for flexibility, mobility. Anything you do, if you repeat it the same way, you're going to need to change it up. Now, if we're talking about changing it up, how do we actually change it? So it doesn't have to be massively different. I'm not saying if you're, you know, training like a sprinter 1 week, you need to suddenly train like a marathon runner, because that's different. Sure, it's different, but it still has to be relevant to your time on stage, right? So if, for example, I say, okay, 1 week we're going to be doing, you know, 60-second sprints, then, Nick, you know, if we do that for 8 weeks, I'm not going to then turn around in 8 weeks' time and say, okay, now we're going to go out and run 10 miles per day. It's just too extreme. It's changing it too much. It has to still mimic your dance requirements. So if your dance time on stage is 60 seconds, you know, for 8 weeks, I might have you run 2 to 3 minutes. For 8 weeks, I might have you run 60 seconds. For 8 weeks, I might have you run 20 to 30 seconds. So in those, you know, 24 weeks, we have covered, you know, just over stage time. We've covered exactly stage time, and we've covered the first 20 to 30 seconds of stage time. And for any dancers that are on the academy and listen to this, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. For any that isn't, you'll pick up what I mean, because we're, you know, if we're working over stage time, of course, we're going to be working on the endurance aspect. If we're working under stage time, we may be working on the speed and acceleration and sharpness aspect, okay? But we're still changing the training, but it is still relevant to your sport and requirements. So that means that the changes can be more subtle, right? You don't need to change a lot. You may just change the recovery time. You might change the volume, so you might not dance for as long. If you don't dance for as long, it means it can be sharper and so on. So you need to change things around, okay? When we're talking about falling into your efficient gear, is that when you don't change things around, your body becomes more efficient at it, okay? It's essentially how you get stronger. If you keep going into a gym and you keep lifting heavier weights, it's more of a challenge every time you go in, and you're still challenging the body, which means it has to adapt. If you go into the gym and lift the same weight and don't change it, your body will adapt, and therefore you're not going to see any strength gains or muscle gain or whatever it is you're looking for. Exactly the same principles have to apply for dancing, okay? So if you're going into class and you're just turning up and you're just going through the motions, then you're not going to see any progression because your body has adapted to that many, many months and years before, okay? So we need to change things around. When your body becomes efficient, it's a good thing because it's now time to add more training in or change something about it. But if you don't, then your progress is going to stall. Okay, and this is why you'll see people who are, you know, training for fat loss or anything like that. They get efficient at doing, you know, 4 days of cardio per week. Then the weight starts stalling. They don't lose any more weight. So then they add in a fifth day. Then they add in a sixth day and so on. Because the body starts adapting to it and it makes it easier. All right. So that kind of gives you an idea of just how important that changing the training is. It's a massive, massive job for us to change the academy training every 4 to 6, 8 weeks. You know, we could easily have had everybody do the same thing for 24 weeks and told you all that, you know, that's the best way to do it. But ultimately, it isn't. And so we're prepared to do the extra work to change it when it should be changed, because ultimately we want to get you all results. And so that just shows you, you know, just how important it is to do that. And you need to do the same with your dancing. So one of the issues then with settling into your most efficient gear is that we see dancers in home practice. Now, I probably spoke about this before, but it's a good time to touch on it now. If you're at home and you're practicing the same steps over and over and over again for such a long period of time, you are just settling into an efficient gear. It is not challenging. You could probably do it with your eyes closed and you're just practicing the rhythm and the movement. But guess what? You learned the rhythm and the movement probably years and years ago. And how do I know this? Because it's, again, like I've said before, if you stop dancing for 5 years and you don't dance at all for 5 years, I guarantee you, you can still get up after 5 years and dance. You will still remember the rhythm. You'll still remember your steps. So what you're going to lose is the quality of the work. You're not going to lose the ability to do the movement. Like, for example, I always say when you know how to ride a bike, you will always know how to ride a bike. So when you're at home practicing in your efficient gear, you're just repeating the same movements over and over and over again. And it's very lethargic and robotic, okay? And this puts you into more of a conserve mode. You're just doing long training at a reduced gear. But when you step on stage, you're not in a reduced gear. You're not in, you don't have that ability just to settle and conserve. You have to go all out for 60 seconds. So essentially you're training in a different gear, okay? If you're able to dance at home for an hour, at a pace that you can last for an hour, it's gonna be much slower than it is gonna be on stage, which means you're developing a gear that you don't really need, all right? Because when you step on stage, it's now 100% max effort for 60 seconds, but you're at home practicing 50% effort for 1 hour. You see what I mean? So it's not to say that there isn't a time and place to practice 50% effort for 1 hour, but not in the, you know, coming up to a competition. It has to be so close to competition conditions, okay? So you cannot practice in your most efficient gear for long because you're just making it easier for yourself in training, but much harder for yourself to win on stage because it's not challenging the body, you're not changing anything, and it doesn't win the race, okay? So this then could lead on to the argument around why are we practicing for so long leading up into a competition? And it's exactly what we always speak about with dance schools that we go out to in our workshops and so on. It's one of the first things we try to change is because we see an increase in volume coming up to the World Championships. Now we have 10 weeks to Worlds. And so what's going to happen is each week we're going to start getting more and more work to do. And probably like 3 or 4 weeks out from the Worlds, you'll be doing the most amount of dancing you've ever done. The extra classes will be added in. They're going to be longer and so on. Now, if I was a 400 meter runner or a 200 meter runner and 10 weeks out from the Olympics, I start adding in more work. So I'm running for 1 hour a night, then I start running for 2 hours a night, I start running for 3 hours a night, I start running for 4 hours a night, I do it 4 days, 5 days, 6 days. By the time I get to that Olympics, I'm now trained to do a lot of dancing. I've trained my body to be able to dance for a significant amount of hours without very little rest, okay? But my competition in the Olympics is to run 400 meters as hard and as fast as I can and just do one of them and get a couple of hours break. So suddenly, just because it's dancing, I'm still running, so it doesn't matter whether I'm doing a 400 meter race or a long distance race. You know, I gotta train specifically for my sport, for my event time on stage. But because it's dancing, people think that it's still gonna benefit the dance, right? Doesn't matter we are dancing for 1 hour, dancing for 5 hours, because it's in the category of dance, people will still think that it's gonna benefit you. But that's, like I say, I'm not going to train like a middle distance runner and expect it to benefit me whenever I go and do a sprint. So you can't train like an endurance dancer and expect it to benefit you when you go on and do a dance sprint, if you like, an all-out burst for 60 seconds. So this is what you got to think about when you're adding in the volume as you go closer to the competition, is that when you add volume in, your body has to try to find a way to settle into an efficient gear. It can't go all out because you're giving it more and more to do. So suddenly you start slowing down the pace of everything that you do in order for you to last longer. Now, of course, there's a huge injury risk involved with adding in all, you know, more and more training. There's more impact and on all of those things, but that's a separate issue. What we want to look about here is just the actual training effect. So you're adding more and more in, and you're taking yourself further and further away from the actual competition goals on that day, okay? So for me, and for every other sport, and if any of your parents or anybody has a sporting background, they will all know that, or if your brothers or whoever are playing any sort of sport, you'll know that when they lead into a major competition, everything is the intensity is still high, but the the quantity of everything has dropped off. So they will peak for a competition. And when we say peak, what we really mean is you will do less of your training as you lead into the competition so that you can be rested, but you can also be really, really sharp. It doesn't mean you train any easier. The quality of everything is still really, really high, but you're practicing competition conditions, which means you're practicing all-out sharp bursts for 60 to 90 seconds, or you might be working on the first 30 seconds of a dance and the sharpness and speed. You don't really need to be working on that long hours of practice. And if you do need to work on that, then you haven't done any work in the months and months leading up to it, because your stamina is going to be really poor and you should have worried about that months before. And the stamina should already be under control, and you should be now working on the speed of everything, okay? So I hope that helps. That kind of explains what we were talking about in our post around the most efficient gear. Now, from there, we then moved on and started, we put up a video around, we called it front clicks and sinking hips, right? Now, in this video, we have a photo of Lauren, who's just doing a perfect front click on one side, and then on the right-hand side, under the sinking hips section, she's doing a front click, but the bottom leg is bent. The upper body is rounded. Okay, now this is a classic position that we see on stage. Before I start, or when I initially just started training Lauren, I didn't really know anything about Aries dancing. I was training a lot of athletes in other sports. She came to me and wanted to be trained, and one of my jobs was to go along and actually watch Aries dancing and see what's the movement patterns of the sport, and just see how things work, what muscles are involved, what did I need to train her in, what did she need to improve in, how was I going to put a program together to improve her performance and keep her on top. And one of the first things I noticed from a technical aspect, because I didn't really understand any of the, you know, the dancing at all, looked kind of the same to me, but what I could see was what was happening when dancers were going off for a front click was that their back legs were bending, their hips were sinking, and their carriages, hips, and glutes weren't able to support the movement that they were trying to do. Now, in this video, Lauren just gives some movements around how to fix this issue, okay? But one of the things I wanted to go through when we were actually discussing it and breaking it down is the bottom leg of your front clicks. Now, we see so many dancers on stage that are so focused on getting this front leg as high as possible that they forget about everything else that's happening in the rest of the body. Your front leg can only go as high as possible, but not at a detriment to the rest of your body, okay? You should not be able to do it as a result of throwing everything else out of whack, okay? You should only go as high as it can without keeping everything else in place. Now, one of the issues, again, is that dancers will always work on the flexibility of the front leg. So you're improving the flexibility of the front leg, which means that front leg can now go higher. But you haven't improved the strength in the back leg to support that leg going high. Because the further away and the higher that leg goes from the body on the front, the more strength you need on the back to keep your body grounded. Okay, if you only lift your leg up a little bit, it's going to be easier on the back leg to stay grounded and straight. The higher that front leg goes, the more force is required to bring the front leg up. And the more force that's required to bring the front leg up means the back leg has to work harder, because essentially that front leg is moving away from the body. So the pull and the force is going forward, but your back leg has to counteract that and stay completely straight. So the stronger your back leg is, the more you're going to be able to control that front leg and vice versa. So one of the things that I would say with everyone trying to improve the front clicks, and we said time and time again, is that you cannot improve the flexibility of something unless you're going to be prepared to improve the strength of the opposite position. Okay, so remember, all muscles work in pairs. If you're going to stretch one thing, you need to strengthen the other so that you keep the stability of the muscle or joint. Now, in the case of the front leg, if you're working on your flexibility of your clicks and you don't work on the strength, you're going to immediately see your back knee bend, your hips are going to sink, and your upper body is going to round. Okay, your front leg might get over your head, but it's going to be as a result of the back of your body just collapsing. Okay, so if your hips are dropping, and this goes for everything, front clicks and all other movement, if your hips are sinking, then they simply aren't strong enough to support what is happening in whatever movement it is that you're doing. And when we say hips, we're not really talking about your hip flexors as such. We're generally talking around your hip girdle, right? So we're looking at your hamstrings and your glutes. They're generally too weak to support the pull coming from the front leg, and this is why you sink. So in this video, Lauren gives a couple of good glute and hamstring exercises that are very specific to the needs of a dancer in the front click position. And these are designed to develop the strength on the back leg to hold it completely straight and resist the pull going forwards, okay? Now, one other thing I would touch on that, well, for a start, if you haven't seen those exercises, then I would suggest you pop on the social media and watch the video front clicks and sinking hips. And that those two exercises will help. It doesn't necessarily mean they're going to fix. It is a start. And then you will need to build up the strength on those movements. So stronger bands, add a more resistance and so on. But those movements will teach you the area that you actually need to strengthen, okay? Now, the last thing that we would talk about is those movements. And in the post, we just discussed that how important it is for you to keep your training specific to a dancer's needs. We get a lot of questions coming through with the dancers on the academy who may not have access to be able to run. Maybe the weather's too cold outside. They can't get outside to run. And so some of the questions are, is it possible to do some burpees inside? Because, you know, we're still working out, we're still moving, and we can't get outside because of the weather, or we're too young to get into a gym, or whatever it might be. And obviously, some movement is better than no movement at all, right? If it comes down to doing nothing or doing something will always be better. But doing the right thing will always be better than just doing something. And when it comes to a sport, exercise and sports are completely different. The point of an exercise is just to keep the body fit. The point of sports is to train specifically for the needs of that sport. Okay, so these types of dance specific exercises, they're hugely different for an Irish dancer's needs, as opposed to doing burpees in a park, right? Doing burpees and press ups and tuck jumps and high knees and all these sorts of things, they're just general exercise. They're all doing them in your local gym. But is everybody in your local gym training to be an Irish dancer? No. So if these movements were specific to an Irish dancer, then why would everybody in your local circuits class be doing them? Okay, you're training to be an Irish dancer. You're not training to just be fitter, all right, or lose weight or whatever it is. So we need to keep things specific to an Irish dancer's needs. So these exercises that Lauren demonstrates are designed to fix a certain movement or a certain muscle that is required in a movement for your dancing. If you were to do these with the general population, it would probably serve very little purpose and give very little benefit to them. And that's what you want. You want to ask yourself, does this movement make sense and is it relevant to my needs as an Irish dancer? And if you're confused, ask yourself, would you give it to someone from the general population? Would they do it? Would it benefit them? Because 9 times out of 10, general aerobic work is not going to benefit an athlete or someone that's highly trained, because they're way past that. And something that an athlete or a highly trained dancer should be doing is not really something that the general population should or would do. Okay, there's generally that vast difference. So you must keep the training specific and relevant to your needs. It's not just about getting fit. There's many different types of fitness. A marathon runner is fit, a sprinter is fit, but it's two completely different types of fitness. And as an Irish dancer, we need to establish what is the type of fitness that an Irish dancer needs. And if your main goal is to become the best dancer that you can be, and you don't care about playing hockey in school, you don't care about swimming, you don't care about anything else, and dancing is your number one priority, then the type of training that you do outside of dance class must also be designed to improve and enhance your dance performance and not take away from it, okay? And sometimes these movements can take away from it. Like I say, some movement is always better than no movement, but if we're going to go to the effort of training in the first place and you're going to put in all the work and your burpees and high knees and all these things, then you might as well put in that work and effort into something that is going to carry across into your stage performance and not necessarily make you work hard, but then 3 months down the line, you can't understand why you're not actually making any progress. And when you look back, the movements that we have been doing haven't really been specific to the needs of a dancer, okay? So it is a learning curve, guys. It's something that you know, we all do initially, because we understand that we need to train, but we don't understand the type of training that we need to do. And I think that's why one of the main reasons why the academy has been so successful in such a short period of time, because dancers have gotten to the point where they actually acknowledge that it is a sport. They acknowledge that people and dancers are getting so much sharper and faster, stronger, and they need to keep up and to do that, we don't really know what to do. So at least we have the guidance there. But anyone who's doing anything on their own, you just need to make sure that we keep it specific, okay? So those are the two main points for podcast 16. Do not allow yourself to fall into the most efficient gear for too long. Make sure you are changing your training on a regular basis. Make sure that you're being very careful with your home practice, that you're not letting it go on too long. You're not being robotic with it, and that you're keeping it with the same intensity that you would have on stage. Do not allow yourself to adapt for too long without changing your training or fall into the most efficient gear. And in regards to your front clicks, do not make your force your front leg high at the expense of your back knee bending and your upper body rounding. Make sure that if you're working on the flexibility of the front leg, that you also work on the glute and hamstring strength of the back leg. And if you need any visual cues on that, make sure that you check out the front clicks and sink in hips video, which it will be on social media channels, okay? So that's everything for podcast 16. Thanks very much for listening. We will all be at Worlds, so I hope that anyone that's going is training extremely hard for that. Keep the questions coming in and we will try and get them answered on the podcast. Most of your questions do actually end up turning into social media posts, which then will turn into me discussing them in a little bit more detail on here. Okay, guys, so keep working hard and I will speak to you hopefully next week for podcast 17.